Angus Young. How you doing?
Good, Becca.
The Offspring.
How's it going, Becca?
Dave Grohl. How you going, mate?
Good, man.
Pete, it's been a long time coming.
Oh, Becca, hasn't it indeed?
We go inside the dressing room, speak to the biggest names in music.
Keith Richards, the Rolling Stones.
And crack open their esky.
This is exactly how I imagined you, by the way, sitting opposite me with a vodka and orange.
You're a discerning chap.
This is The Rider.
Yeah, it's Becca. Welcome back to The Rider. Last week, we had Pat from Grinspoon reminiscing about how they started off in the mean streets of Lismore and also why they started off in Lismore. We're going to find out by going back to last week's episode on all platforms, and also Billy Corgan from the Smashing Pumpkins, one of the highlights of this series of The Rider. Now, this week, we're getting all set for another big weekend at the Monday Bash. I was there last year and had just the most wild time, and it all starts Thursday the 17th. On the lineup, you have the Hoodoo Gurus, along with the Waifs and Furnace and the Fundamentals, but also a bit of history is happening. It's the very last gig with the Angels and Dave Gleason up front. And that's been, I think, about 10 years of Gleason fronting the Angels, a real boyhood dream, and it's all happening this weekend coming at the Monday Bash in Broken Hill. If you haven't got your tickets for this year, you have to go sometime in your life. It is a lot of damn fun for the Monday Bash.
This is The Rider.
Now, this week on The Rider, someone who I actually saw last year at the Monday Bash, I'm talking about Adelita from Magic Dirt. It started off in the early 90s, but it wasn't until when this song dropped that all of a sudden Triple J started playing, and then they were everywhere. There was Dirty Jeans,
Plastic Loveless Letter,
Plastic Loveless Letter, which really was a massive moment for the band. And even a few years ago, I still think it's one of my favourite songs from Magic Dirt. Hate it. And it's so good to have Magic Dirt back on the road. The tour continues right around the country. Adelita, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm great. It's good to hear your voice and thanks for coming on.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
I met you recently at the Monday Bash. So this is last year in the middle of the desert, and you were well and truly in action with the Rolling Stones review. And like, what an incredible experience to do a show like that in the desert.
Yeah, man. It was incredible. Yeah, so lucky. Just still pinching myself. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yourself and the band Magic Dirt, you know, it's been a, you know, it's a proper journey. Like you started off in the early 90s and you never had overnight success. And many bands these days seem to be able to have that. They can start in the bedroom and before you know it, you know, you're on the radio, you're streaming millions of streams. But for you, it's a proper, you know, career.
Yeah, well, I never thought it would be a career. I don't know. Like, I did a lot of, you know, dance and drama at school, but I was never really into music until I was 19. And then, boom, like, just taught myself how to play. We're all self-taught in the band. And, you know, we just jammed together as mates. And we were kind of doing what we loved to do, which was just explore an art form, which happened to be music, together. And then people liked what we were doing, so it kind of just turned into a career. And I'm surprised. I'm really surprised that it happened in a way. But it just kept going and going, and things just kept blossoming and burgeoning and getting bigger. So we just rolled with it, mate. We just rolled with it, and here we are. So it really was. But back then we had the time to do that. It's different now. Well, I think things seem to move really fast and way differently to how when we started.
So you're self-taught, which means do you know how to read music, or have you skipped that part?
I do know how to read music, but it takes me a long time, so I'm not proficient in it. But I just learned from a book. I learned, like, how to play guitar from a book. And that was it. After just learning a few chords, you only need, you know, three or four chords, and then you can write a song. So that's sort of where I went.
Did I read that you actually made your own guitar at one stage? Is that true?
Oh, Yeah, that's true. I made a lot of things, computers, guitars. You know, when you're a kid, you just make stuff. So, yeah, I remember making a little guitar, out of some wool. So the wool was the strings and the cereal box was the guitar. And yeah, that's funny that I did that. It's so funny.
That's true. Well, there you go. But as you were saying, the things have changed and, these days, you can be overnight success literally and then gone the next day. But the whole ARIA chart thing has changed and how, bands get their, get their pay, get their revenue. And do you feel lucky that you got your start in the early 90s?
Yeah, I wonder what it would be like now for us as a band, It's hard to imagine, but I feel like the 90s were sort of like, probably the last big music movement, and I don't know. I really feel like it's a genre that we were in and this big, big musical movement. And, it was great to be in that, lucky. I love growing up in the 90s. I love being part of that. It was such a great time to be making music and being in a band. It was awesome.
Yeah, well, it was. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, because I grew up in the 90s, that's the music that molds your life. And when you're part of that as a fan as well as a musician, there's something special when you look back because, that doesn't feel daggy for us, but we look back at shows like, Recovery and Getting Up Early, watching Rage and, popping on Triple J and hearing Michael Tunn on a nighttime show or whatever, all those memories revolve around the music you heard at the time. And you always know what year it was when you heard a certain song. And there was street press. There was a passion about music, which is very different now.
Yeah, it's different. It's definitely different. I mean, I think that this music still seems to be going strong, like people still go and see shows and they love music. Music's part of our lives. But it was definitely a time and a place and such a vibe back in the 90s and, those sort of early 2000s when music was huge. I mean, the Big Day Outs, you remember those? I mean, they were massive. They just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
They did. They did. It was so sad when the Big Day Out finally stopped, it felt like we all lost our youth in a way because we were holding on to it, Particularly 1995, which was one of your years, that was the year.
Really?
Yeah, because you had Silverchair on the bill and you had Hole and then I don't know if you saw it, but there was this whole fighting, between Courtney Love and she hated Silverchair because she thought they were trying to be like Kurt and like Nirvana. So she, backstage there was a bit of stuff going on. I think she might have even sort of attacked their tour bus or something or their high-ass van or whatever it might have been. But that was a great year though.
Was Silverchair playing at the Big Day Out?
Yeah. So that would have been 95. Yeah.
Yeah, right. I remember we supported Hole on some of their headline club shows. And yeah, that was pretty mind blowing to be doing that. But I don't think I ever met Courtney Love. We met the bass player and Eric. I think his name was Eric. They were really nice. Really nice people. Yeah. But, I mean, we met lots of people at the Big Day Out, all the famous people, your Iggy Pop, your Shirley Manson and White Stripes and, just so many. And Joe Strummer. I remember, Joe Strummer came over. Yeah, I know, right? We were came over to the spa. We were all sitting in because backstage, you'd have these big spas, that you'd just sit in. And we're like, Joe! And he comes over and he was so nice. Yeah, it was such a time.
Well, this is what I heard. They really looked after the artists and, the backstage party must have been insane on certain years. I mean, the flight to Perth everyone talked about was iconic. That was the big one.
Yeah, Perth copped it. It was like the last Big Day Out. So everyone was like, we get to relax and chill out and just party hard. And because, you want to be really good for Sydney and Melbourne and, and then you're like, Adelaide and Perth, we're just going to party.
I went to a few of those over there and it certainly felt like, the end of the run for all the bands and not in the bad way though. It was really fun.
No, we still wanted to do a great show and all of that, but you know what I mean? It's like the pressure's off, a bit when you can just relax and it was awesome. Perth was yeah, great after parties at the hotels, you know, really swanky hotels. And they definitely looked after the artists and we had a great time.
Spring Loaded must have been, must have felt like a return to the Big Day Out in a way, or at least time to reminisce, because the lineups for Spring Loaded were all well and truly Big Day Out bands you would have seen and Livid.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That totally felt like we're revisiting our younger days, and it was like a sort of a Aussie little day out, you know, vibe, and just so great to play with our mates. And we've all pretty much done the Big Day Out. I would say every single band has, and totally feels like that. And it's, again, you know, Mark really looks after his artists and it's such a great vibe. The crowds love it. And we're all in the same boat. We're all middle-aged, rocking out, you know, fucking loving it, you know. Yeah, it's really well run and it's such a great vibe. And, it goes off. Like, I'm so surprised and pinch myself like, wow, that we can do this now and there's an audience for it and we get to kind of, you know, actually, you know, it helps us to maintain our careers to be able to do these big festivals. It's such a great thing to have, you know, and it's a great
Well,
show.
That's right. I mean, Mark does have a great passion for supporting Aussie bands and Aussie artists. And, you know, we always thought after COVID that it'd be a renaissance period of Australian music because, you know, it's going to take a while before the international artists start to come here. And it's kind of happened like that. But it was just so good when things started to open up just a little bit and we could go. And I remember my first gig after COVID was, or during COVID, to be honest, was Spring Loaded in Sydney. And, you know, there was that one with Grinspoon and it was the first standing up concert I've been to in over a year. And it was so good.
That's awesome. Was that the Randwick one?
That was the Randwick one. It was insane. It was just...
Yeah, how good was it? Like, people were just going off, like, more than they ever have. And it was great to come back to something like that, you know, after COVID. And just goes to show how people love music, you know, they just need it in their lives.
Yeah.
It's great.
Well, that's the thing. I think we realized that when we had to stop going to gigs and I think we just missed it so much. And we're so grateful of that particular Spring Loaded because I think all the odds were against it. Like we thought it wasn't going to happen and there were, you know, COVID sort of cases popping up in sort of Western Sydney. And I kept thinking that day, yeah. Oh God, I'm going to get the phone call. It's going to be off, you know. And everyone was great. Everyone was well behaved, and the police were actually pretty, you know, pretty good. They let the party happen, and I think we're all just very grateful it happened.
Yeah, I know. I think we were thinking the same thing. Like, oh no, just on the knife's edge with COVID. It's like, oh no, is it going to shut down? And I remember that there was a couple of shaky moments, but thankfully it went ahead and. Yeah, because there's so much involved in putting on a big festival, you know, and yeah, it's not just bands, you know, it's crew and, you know, so many people involved. It's, yeah, it's great it went ahead, but love it. Love Spring Loaded. It's bloody awesome.
So who do you want to work together again with, you know, from that era? Because I know you've you know, got back sort of hanging out with Tex and with, you know, Tim Rogers and... is there anyone sort of from that era where you go, oh, I've sort of lost contact with them. I'd love to, you know, bring them in and do a song with them or you know, there's got to be a couple who've just sort of you've lost contact with because it was a crazy era.
Yeah, it was a crazy era. I mean, I would love to do a joint Magic Dirt and Tumbleweed show. Like, I reckon that's something that would be on the cards. You know, we used to tour together a lot back in the day. Yeah, like we just really get along and sort of cut from the same cloth and I reckon that'd be a sick show. I actually recently teamed up with Scream Feeder. We're working on a little tasty little thing that I can't – well, I recorded one of their songs with them. They're just doing this special thing but can't reveal all the details yet. But so we've kind of hooked up – and, you know, I've been watching them at the Spring Loaded shows. I'm such a fan, so I'm always running to their set, watching from side of stage when they're playing. Love to sing with bloody Rat Cat. That would be awesome. Oh, do something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love them. So, yeah.
I saw Rat Cat at one of the final shows at the Annandale before it kind of became a a fancy place to go and get a burger. They were so good, but I couldn't believe how big their international sort of crowd was. Like, they were all Brazilians in there cheering them on. Like, it was more Brazilians, I reckon, in that room than Aussies.
Really?
Yeah. Like, they were seriously, there were all these Brazilian people who knew Rat Cat.
Wow. I wonder if they've ever played over there. If they haven't, they should.
Oh, I'm sure they have. I hope they have. But, I mean, often back then it would just take one DJ, you know, on the radio to play the song. And it could be anywhere. It could be in the middle of America and just one radio station. And all of a sudden, certain bands had a following in the middle of nowhere and they couldn't figure out why. And it's just because that was the days of the power of the radio DJ who chose his own music.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, Rat Cat, their songs are so great too. Like, they were playing heaps of stuff off Tingles and, like, I was just, like, singing every song and just going nuts when they played. Like, they played that last Spring Loaded at Sandstone Point. And I was just going mental. And every song, I understand why. I mean, I'm a huge fan. So.
And I'm with you on Tumbleweed, by the way. When I saw him at the Randwick show at Spring Loaded, like when Hang Around comes on, like when that opening riff, like I almost cry because it's such a great song, you know. Yeah.
I know. How good is it when they start Daddy Long Legs too? I just go nuts.
Oh, like, yeah. Yeah, Daddy such Long Legs is brilliant. And, you know,
isn't it?
Richie's Dancing is out of control of that song. Oh.
How good is Richie's Dancing? I always thought he was just such a, and I still do, like, he's just the coolest dude, like one of the coolest dudes in Australian rock. Like, he's just amazing. I love that band so much.
Yeah. I saw him mid-COVID at the Paddington RSL upstairs in a seated gig. So can you imagine, you know, maybe 30 people in a seated gig with tables and chairs, and they were loud. They were so loud, and I was probably standing just in front of the speakers, and I feel like my body was moving. But a seated gig for Tumbleweed, it was so bizarre.
Was that because of COVID?
Yeah, it was because of COVID. They had those dumb sit-down rules, which I had to do, and bands were doing matinee shows and, you know.
Yeah, I saw a few bands doing that. I can't recall. I don't think we ever did anything like that, but I remember seeing bands doing that,
Was it good getting back on stage, you know, with the boys in Magic Dirt?
We didn't think we'd ever be touring again after Dean passed. So, you know, just the way it all just organically happened when we were back in 2018 and then it just started up again and it felt, you know, obviously – you know, it's hard and it's weird, but there's another part of us where it just felt great, you know, and you know, Dean would have been very proud of us doing it and happy that we were doing it. And yeah, it felt just awesome, like just getting back together, you know, we just love hanging out with each other and yeah, a bit older, a bit creakier, but that's all right.
Do you feel like you're a better musician though when you're older? Because I know many guitarists have always said, you know, I'm a better guitarist as a 50-year-old than I was as a 18-year-old, and is it true?
I think it's partially true for me because just in general I feel older, wiser, you know, just a bit more lived a life, you know.
Yeah.
But as far as technique, I can't do certain things as fast as I used to do. So I have to change the way I strum. So technique-wise, perhaps, you know, not as supple as I was when I was young. But, you know, that when you've got that wisdom behind you, there's a certain weightiness to what you're doing. I think it's a good thing. It's got this kind of, I don't know what, you know, it's just got a certain, it's got history behind it, you know?
Many is a practice.
Really, it feels, you know, like we're elders of some sort and we can still say things with our instruments and things, you know, to still tell our stories, but do it with a bit of a wise old kind of way.
And many bands have, you know, held back the drinking a bit as well in the older age because you can't quite bounce back like you could, you know, when you're in your 20s.
God, no, mate. No way. Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, I'm not drinking at the moment, which is I'm really enjoying, but I love having tequila shots and all that jazz, you know. But, yeah, no, the hangovers are bad. So, and, you know, I've enjoyed much drinking and partying for a very long time over the years, you know. So, yeah, you know, I've been there, done that.
I bet. And I enjoyed watching it from side of stage because I was doing the hosting at Monday for the whole weekend. And I love watching you warm up because you do a proper warm up, like, you know, like doing stretches and psyching yourself up. And I've never seen it before. It was so cool.
Sometimes, mate, sometimes I don't do any warm ups at all. It depends how I'm feeling. But for something like the Rolling Stones review, I get really serious. Like, oh my God, I have to put on a really good show. Do all the things. Do all the warm-up things.
And, you know, there is pressure with that because you are the focus. You got a great band behind you and you know, you're the focus of the show. And I know, you know, Tim puts so much energy into the songs he did. Tex was very relaxed. He literally was back there with a cup of tea and he was late to the stage. I think they really had to chase him to find him because he was just sort of wandering around chatting to people and he wasn't on time. But Tim, I know, took it very seriously.
Oh, Tex is always on time. It may not look like, you know, like he might look very relaxed, but Tex takes it very seriously and he's a consummate professional. They have totally everyone's so unique and different, and Tim and Tex are totally different, like, the way they do things and perform and stuff like that. It's interesting how people do get prepared for the shows. And actually, Tex's tea is it's a special tea that he drinks for his voice. So it helps to coat the vocal cords. So it's not just any old cuppa. It's like a proper hardcore herbal thing that he's got specially made. Yeah.
I was talking to someone else about a similar story about that, and I think it was Tim Rogers, actually. Tim was talking about how Jimmy's got his concoction, but he will never reveal what's in it.
No, we won't. We won't reveal all the secrets. We won't tell you all the details.
that was a great tour. And did you get to do the Big Red Bash at Birdsville as well as part of the package?
I did.
What a trip.
Have you been out to Birdsville?
Not yet. I'm trying.
Oh, mate. Oh, I really hope you get out there. It's just stunning. It's absolutely mind-blowing. You would love it. It's incredible. I've never been anywhere like that. I mean, I've been to Alice Springs and Darwin and sort of Cooper Pedy and far-flung places, but never anything like the what's the desert called out there?
Oh, the Simpson, I think. Is it Simpson?
The Simpson, yeah. Oh my God, I cried. It was so emotional stepping off the plane onto that red dirt. It's just like nowhere else.
Well, I believe it because I guess I grew up listening to Midnight Oil singing about the desert, you know, and the passion of that countryside. And I know I got emotional when I was driving across the Nullarbor, you know, as the sun was setting with my dad, and, you know, you hit that point where it's just completely flat, and I put on Great Southern Land and it just felt special. And I think, you know, being up at Birdsville as well, you know, with the big sand dune overlooking the festival, just to have a couple of moments up there, maybe on your own, just to reflect, I think would be pretty amazing.
I pinch myself because part of this job, you know, that we do as musicians, we get to travel a lot, you know, to the so many amazing places and meet so many amazing people. And that's part of why we love doing what we do. It's not just the music. It's for Magic Dirt, it's touring. You know, that's, you know, probably the biggest part of it besides making records, you know. And Monday was incredible. I walked around Broken Hill and I've been there before a couple of times, I went to the radio station with the brick.
Yeah.
Like a radio.
It looks like a radio. Yeah.
It does. And I was walking past and somehow I was in there and I was talking to the guy that was running one of the shows there and we just struck up a conversation. It was great. And, you know, it's, yeah, it's pretty incredible. Like, yeah, I think every Australian should see things like the Simpson Desert and Broken Hill, and it's just beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, Broken Hill was a huge surprise. I, you know, got to drive around and walk around, and it was the pubs were great, the accommodation was amazing, the food was good. There was the gallery as well. I forget the painter's name who comes from Broken Hill, but how this mining town, which would have been a pretty rough place back in the day, is actually a real lovely place now, and it's worth a look.
Definitely worth a look, yeah. It's pretty incredible. And just, you know, getting out to the gig, it's quite a trek. You know, it's not just, you're there and you go to the gig. Like, and, you know, people are coming from far and wide, driving for hours and hours to get to these shows. So, you know, hats off to the punters, you know, and they just, they're the other half. They're our other half. They make it happen. And I just love the fact that they're on the road like us. They're just touring around in their cars, going to see a concert, and they get so much out of it. It's such a great bonding experience. It's bloody awesome,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And also the crowd at a place like Mundi Mundi as well. They're really lovely people. They're really respectful and they're genuine music fans, and they just want to have a good time. And got to spend a bit of time with Sarah McLeod by a fire drinking beer, and I really enjoyed that too.
Oh, awesome.
Tell us about the solo stuff you put out recently, because I know the album which came out, it was Inland, so 2022. That was a tough one, I guess, coming out of COVID. It must have been a struggle to try and be creative and get it out there.
Yeah. It took a long time to make. I couldn't work on it full time because I had to work really hard and stay on the road and do shows to, you know, as you do.
Yeah.
So that's partly the reason why it took so long. And just the songs were really complex in tempo changes and all these technical things. So technically, it was hard to record and get proper versions. I had to re-record a lot of stuff. So, you know, there was a lot of work involved behind the scenes just to nail the songs down. That's basically it. The songs were written really quickly. It was just the recording process, yeah. But I'm glad it's out. Like, I can't believe it actually got done. I nearly gave up. It was a bloody hard one. Yeah.
It's hard too. I can imagine being an artist in a space of 5 years, you've changed a lot as a person, and to put a song out that could be 4 years old or whatever, it might have a use-by date. You know, you might be in a different place. It might not fit with the album, and it must be hard to be brutal and go, you know what, that can be left off and I'll keep that for some other time.
Yeah, I think, yeah. Well, I kept all the songs, but definitely some of it had aged because I'd sort of moved past the initial, you know, what I wrote the songs about. But, you know, then it became almost like an artifact that I dug out. It was like this archaeological dig. So, it became this heritage record for me. You know, I have to put this out. It's a document. I've uncovered it. I have to put it out. I have to honour it, even though part of me was like, oh, okay, I'm ready for something new. I've moved past this. So in mental health side of things, it that was also had its moments.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking earlier about the 90s and what an incredible hotbed of time it was for music. Was it kind of weird, you know, that you did all the hard work in the 90s and had a great time and toured and did the big day out and all that stuff. And it wasn't really until after 2000 you were exposed to the masses in a way. It sort of felt like you probably got away with being under the radar. And then finally, you know, just after 2000, I think when Dirty Jeans got a heap of radio play you guys must have looked at each other and gone, oh, this is what it's all about. You know, it would have been weird.
Yeah, well, it was weird. I mean, we had no idea that Dirty Jeans would explode the way it did. You know, we're just flying by the seat of our pants the whole time. When that went nuts, it was, yeah, it was so weird. Like Warner's signed us, you know, and we were like, yeah, cool. You know, and they were really interested in the record and interested in us. We had a great A&R guy and they believed in us, I guess. And we, you know, what we get a lot of is, oh, what was it like to be on a major label? You know, were they, was it hard? Did they you know, push you to do certain things, you know, being suspicious of a major label, which is fair enough. But
yeah, yeah.
We had the opposite experience. They were actually one of the best labels we've ever been on. So they just really believed in us, and Dirty Jeans went nuts. And I never liked that song in the beginning, but Dean really believed in it. He produced it with Greg Wales, who initially demoed the song. And then, you know, we went and got another producer, Phil Vinyl, that did it for the actual record.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so Dean really believed in it. So I went along for the ride. I was like, okay, cool, yep. And, of course, I believed in it somewhat, otherwise I wouldn't have done it. But, yeah, it was pretty crazy times. We had a couple of renaissances with the band. We had sort of two big goes. Our first 90s sort of the buzz in the 90s, we were quite big for an alternative act. And then with Warner, that's when we hit the big time, you know, the second time round, we got the second life.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, if you thought you were big with Dirty Jeans, I mean, Plastic Loveless Letter, I thought was even bigger, you know. So did you believe in that song?
I believe in all the songs, Chris. I believe in all the songs, but I was just a little bit, it took me a while to warm to Dirty Jeans, only because it was hard to sing in a way. It was so different. So it took me a while. But I love all the music I put out. I back it 100%. I do. Yeah. But it's just, I favour some over others, and some were a bit harder for me to do. But yeah, Plastic Loveless Letter was a good one. Yeah, I like that one.
You're at home tonight. Is there a glass of wine nearby, or oh, you're off the booze? That's right. You told me you're off the booze.
I don't drink wine. I just do hard liquor, mate. I don't drink wine.
Yeah, good work.
I just do tequila.
Well, actually, on that topic, the podcast is called The Rider, so it's all about asking you as well what is on your rider. When you are drinking, or when the band is touring as well, what is in the esky?
Okay, so we got beer, just straight up beer, and then we've got JD, Jack Daniels. That's for Dean. We make drinks to cheers and honour Dean before the show.
Right.
We get in a circle, we do a cheers. Vodka, but, yeah, that's about it. And then if we want tequila, sometimes we get it from the bar, you know.
Yeah.
If they let us.
If the mood's right, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we do shots, yeah. But that's about it.
Tequila, I mean, margaritas particularly can really creep up on me bad. I've had nights on a Tuesday where we've gone to the local pub and I'm just going, let's get a marg. And then fast forward 2 hours later and I'm like, I don't know how we got home. You know, you just end up at home and don't know how you got here.
I love a margarita.
Now, you're a conservationist and more recently a vegan as well. You weren't a vegan straight away. You're a vegetarian. Is that right?
I was vegetarian since 1988, I reckon. And then I went vegan in around the year 2000. So I've been vegan for 23 years.
Oh, it's been long enough. That's fair. To the point where it doesn't feel like an effort anymore. It's what you do.
Yeah, and I'm a big, you know, love nature. Always try and protect it if it's in trouble. You know, look after it. Love being in it. Always, you love animals. Yeah, I mean, a lot of us. It's very natural to want to be in nature.
Especially if you're from Geelong, industrial town. It's probably less industrial these days, but God, you know, back in the 80s and 90s.
Everybody says it was a rough place. I guess I didn't hang out in the rough areas, but yeah, we got the Shell refinery. We had the Ford factory. Ford factory's not there, not functioning anymore. Shell refinery's still going. And it's very much one of those sort of towns, you know, it's oil and steel and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, it's got a port, you know. But it's a beautiful town too. It's got, you know, it's the gateway to the coast, as you know, the Great Ocean Road. And I lived a lot on the beach side part of Geelong as well when I got into when I left home, you know, I was beach bumming around. So I got to live in the non-rough parts of Geelong.
Yeah, the surfy Geelong. And I know a lot of people.
But there are rough parts, for sure.
I never got to go to Smorgies. Everyone said you got to go to Geelong and go to the Smorgies at the end of the pier, and I never had a chance before it closed.
Smorgies. Oh, my God. No, I don't think I ever went there either. I just stuck to the skate parks and Bowen Club.
Yeah, I can see that. That's fair enough. So you back on the road again soon. You've done various sort of Rolling Stones reviews. So I think from memory, the Sticky Fingers one was, it might have been Exile on Main Street as well. What is your favourite Stones song?
Oh, wow. I love Start Me Up and I love Beast of Burden.
Yeah.
They're two of my favourites.
And it was good, the Monday one, because I think that was a greatest hits type set, wasn't it? So it wasn't just one album and it jumped around a bit.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we do that sort of set as well. And then we do the Sticky Fingers or Exile sort of centric ones, yeah.
Well, it's so good to hang out with you tonight. And thank you for your time. And it's great to hear your stories. And, you know, I've always admired, you know, the band from afar. And well, Adelita, let's stay in touch and thank you for coming on the podcast. So many cool stories from you and been through it all and we're very grateful to have you on the road.
Thanks, Chris, man. Thanks a lot.
Another great chat. Adelita from Magic Dirt. Their tour continues. They're in Tassie last week and you can see them in Adelaide in a few weeks' time. Details on their Facebook page. And while you're online, go to The Writer Pod on Instagram. Give it a follow. There's plenty more to come in this current series. In fact, next week, one of the great Aussie rockers from Beast Suburban and The Cruel Sea. He'll be fronting and doing some of the greatest songs ever written by Johnny Cash as the Man in Black. Tex Perkins, next week. We'll catch you then. This is The Writer with Becco.